Welcome, campers, to a super special Tuesday edition of Camp Divination. We are your hosts. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Carly.
You will notice the gaping maw left in the wake of Ryan's absence. He, it's just not the same without him.
It's not the same without
him. It isn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, thoughts and prayers go to Ryan because he's currently undergoing a quadruple bypass and left leg amputation simultaneously. So.
All at once.
Really, fingers. Yeah, all at once.
Yeah.
I mean, fingers crossed he pulls through because I fucking hate editing. You know?
He does a great job. I also hate. I tried
he does.
One time and I was like, nope. I'm out. Not for y'all, obviously.
Yeah. I honestly, when we were doing fireside chats every Friday, I was like, there for a while, I thought I was doing so good, like editing those episodes before I sent them over to Ryan. And then he's like, just like offhandedly mentioned one day, like, oh, by the way, I do like 2 more hours of editing on all those episodes that you sent me. And I'm like, damn it.
Your thunder has been stolen.
Yeah. I know. He's a fantastic editor. He really is. He's like meticulous, which is something that I struggle with. Like I'm not zooming all the way in so I can pull out like the edge of a dog barking behind a word. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, and he does that shit.
It's so impressive because now that I've recorded with y'all so much, I know how much dogs bark, and you don't really hear that in the episodes at all, which is wild.
I know. Yeah. He's a master. He's gotten very good. I mean, I have 2 corgis and an Irish wolfhound and a Great Dane. And those corgis, they're
the real troublemakers.
They're noisy.
They're the real troublemakers.
Yes. They are.
It's not my precious.
They really are.
It's not my precious Violet, the Irish wolfhound. It's not her. It's the corgis, who I also love deeply.
No. Me too.
And the Great Dane.
But this is my first time recording at my new house.
I know.
So
you have a new.
There are no dogs.
There's no dogs. You have a new background. There's like so many things.
Yep.
It's like playing a game of I Spy behind you in a good way. It's like.
It is.
It's entertaining. Yeah. I notice something different every time I look up.
Yeah. There's, I've kind of like carved out a section of the garage for myself. And so my dogs are sleeping peacefully in the house, hopefully. I wouldn't know though, because they're
problem.
Like 200 feet from me.
Yeah. Not your monkey, not your circus.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, man. So yeah, I'm excited. Tonight we're going to be discussing the mysterious death of Olivia Maybell.
Yes.
And this is one of my favorite cases that we've ever covered. This we covered at like the height of my obsession with tulpas.
Oh, you know what? I'm so excited for this one because you had told me that we were gonna ask about tulpa stuff and I went, oh yes.
Yeah. Yep. It's one of my favorite. It's so fucking weird, and it's, like, mysterious death, so it has, like, a true crime edge, but also there's, like, esoteria and magic and tragedy and...
Literally all of my favorite things rolled into one.
Yep.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Absolutely.
I'm so excited.
So, for those of you who are unaware of this case, I'm just going to read, like, a short summary of the case. If you want a more in-depth version... Just scroll one episode back in the list, and you'll have returned to the mysterious death of Olivia Maybell. So, in 1994 in Salina, Texas, following the tragic loss of their beloved son, Travis and Olivia Maybell went their separate ways. Travis moved to Boston in hopes of moving forward, but Olivia went inside, receding from the world in a 4-year period of grief-stricken seclusion that would culminate in her bizarre death. However, this is not a simple case of unexplainable circumstances. Olivia was found to be dabbling in esoteric magic, ostensibly in hopes of creating a physical manifestation of her lost son.
Oh, shit, son.
Could she have a... Yeah. Could she have accomplished this incredible force of will and mental focus? Could Olivia Maybell have created a genuine tulpa, a thought form of her lost son? Could that tulpa have shirked her control and ultimately turned on her?
Listen, listen, listen. You don't even know, because I haven't told you this, you don't even know how much fucking time I spent this week thinking about Pet Sematary. Are you fucking telling me that we're basically doing the Pet Sematary, but make it real life and not Stephen King? Because that's what I'm hearing right now. Grief, loss, inability to move on, wanting her deceased son back so badly that she potentially brought it back for life, where he then maybe murdered her. That's the entire plot of Pet Sematary, minus some potentially problematic things in this day and age.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of, and we talk about this a lot in the episode, but the idea of a tulpa is very, very old, right? The idea of projecting something onto this plane of existence through pure force of will, right? Like, you just... It's an... Like, it originates with Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Buddhist concept that's sort of been, like, twisted and, you know, molded to modern concepts, into modern concepts. But, like, it's... The thing that really sets this apart is most tulpas are thought of as a result of positive thought and emotion.
Right.
Right? It's... But this, if she actually accomplished this and created a thought form of her lost son, then it was genuinely the result of torment,
mm-hmm.
and grief,
mm-hmm.
and sadness. And what kind of being would that result in, you know?
Pet Sematary. This is Pet Sematary. Oh, I couldn't... I'm even more thrilled now. But I was actually thinking along the same lines as you were, that if you were going to try to create a true positive tulpa, and, like, for a little while there, I was running my own version of the Philip experiment, which is more of an egregore. I don't know. Same side, different sides of the same coin-ish. But
yeah, for those who don't know, an egregore is basically the same concept as a tulpa, but it's the result of massive amounts of people. Like, Santa Claus,
right,
is an egregore.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
oh my
what
god,
I mean?
Like, that's brilliant. That's, I never, yeah, thought about that before.
That's the biggest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest example.
Yeah, so when I was running the Philip experiment, I was using my cards to dictate his character traits, his background, and I was basically telling the story of this fake ghost, right? I paused it for reasons, but I had a very specific idea that I wanted him to be my ghost BFF. Like, we were going to have shenanigans, and, like, that playful energy is what I was putting into this scenario, yeah, because fuck around and find out. I love to do that, and this was just fun for me. But if you look at this woman who is actively grieving and completely unable to move on from her life, how hard would it be? I say this as a person with PTSD. It would be so hard to think of the good memories and focus on the good memories, yeah, to create this life form. She 1000% would have been creating something from grief and despair, and that shit ain't right. That's,
yeah,
Pet Sematary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
There were some really bizarre circumstances around how she was found. So, like I mentioned in the summary, she had been in seclusion basically for years. Like, the only people who ever saw her were the people who delivered her groceries,
mm-hmm.
for years. So, when they ultimately found her, she in the house, they found letters, journal entries, sort of journal entries, more like self-addressed letters, that were dated up to the day that she was found.
Wait, what?
Right? So
the day she had a journal entry dated, she's super fucking dead, but she had a journal entry dated for the day that she was found. I guess she died
yes,
that same day.
The coroner found that she had been dead for almost 3 months.
Wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Who was writing in her journal?
That's a great question. There was no physical evidence found in the house of any other people having been there.
What? I wish that I had listened to this one in advance, because I've never been more fascinated. I was making it a sticking point for reasons best known unto me that I was going to wait to test my chops. And now, curse that side of me. There's so many details that I need to know.
Here's the thing is, on top of that, the reason that she was discovered was because there were a series of phone calls made to the police station from her home.
Shut the fuck up.
The day that they found her.
Like, her deceased Tulpa's son, Pet Cemetery style, was calling?
I don't know.
Listen, in the words of David Duchovny, I want to believe.
Yeah.
And that also ties into Pet Cemetery, because he's in the new one.
It's true.
Pet Cemetery Bloodlines. Did I exclusively watch that for David Duchovny? Yes, I did. Actually, that was a fantastic film. I would have watched that regardless. That was like a fun bonus that David Duchovny was in it.
It's pretty insane, though. It's a really odd thing, because on top of the journal entries, we have the phone calls, and there's no evidence of anyone else having been in that house but her. I mean, there's like, even down to the point that there's like the same thickness layer of dust on the telephone in the house as the rest of the house.
No way.
Like, yeah.
So, okay. I don't know why, but that made, like, that added another... I don't know. I was just imagining, like, a semi-clean house, and, like, I don't know. It doesn't look like anybody else was here. This was, like, this was a dusty, in the words of my son, boy child, a musty, dusty, crusty house.
Yes. Yeah. It was... Basically, she had gotten to the point where she was only using one room of this, like, 3,000 square foot house.
Okay, so we're talking, like, hoarder style, potentially.
She had, like, an altar set up with all these, like...
To her dead son?
Like, with all these, like, arcane symbols. She had, like, letters written to him from her that were spread out all over the altar.
Oh, no.
Like, it was... Yeah. She had fully gone off.
Oh, sweetie. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's
a pretty tragic story.
That is. That's a recipe for disaster. But if her Tulpa son had murdered her, why would he call 3 months later?
That's a great question.
That's a great question. Let's...
We talk also about the estranged husband in this.
Mm-hmm.
That had moved back to Boston. Mm-hmm. The idea that maybe he had reconnected with her. Maybe she had gotten him into this idea also of like bringing the son back in some form.
Snap.
And that maybe he found her and placed the calls and left
without disturbing any of the dust.
Right. But also, I bring up in the episode that this is a 3,000 square foot house, and even back in the 90s, the odds that a house that big would have a single telephone are odd. That's odd, right?
Yeah.
You would at least have like a kitchen phone, and then you'd have one in the living room.
A bedroom
or
phone.
Like that, right?
Yeah. Also, 3,000 square feet is fucking enormous, okay?
It's a big house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's... That's like around the size of like a Victorian.
Yeah.
Like a big Victorian place.
My house in Florida was actually close to 3,000 square feet. It wasn't like, I mean, not exactly, but yeah, it was a big fucking house. So, yeah.
Yeah. We had a Victorian, like 10 years ago that we rented for a while that was 3,100 square feet mm-hmm. if you counted the finished attic.
Totally count it.
So it was like four stories mm-hmm. counting the attic. And yeah, huge place. 3,000 is a lot.
Plenty of places to hide. And also...
And the idea that occurred to me is if there was a second phone, he could have placed the calls from the second phone and unplugged it and took it with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these are landlines. And, yeah.
That's true. I feel like unplugging it and taking it with him would imply a certain level of guilt.
Yeah.
But I also agree with what you're saying, that it would be entirely likely. And if this house was, like, I'm just imagining, like, a hoarder situation, like the TV show, like, with magazines and shit everywhere. If she's only using one room,
yeah,
is it empty?
I don't think it... I don't think it was a hoarder situation
okay.
because she literally didn't buy things.
Okay.
She had groceries, like, delivered to the house every couple
and
weeks,
that was it.
And that's it.
Okay, okay.
So, I think that
so
room
So, we're talking
where,
more 1990s Jumanji, where it's just, like, empty, but everything's there still?
Yes.
With sheets? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It's because she had receded, basically... And into the house wasn't enough,
mm-hmm.
so she receded further into a single room in the house, and that's where she, like, built this connection.
That's wild.
With her son, and so she never left that room. She, you know,
because
what I mean?
That's where her son was, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Is there
which actually goes back to the classic version of a tulpa, where like a Buddhist monk, it would be a mental exercise
mm-hmm.
to create a tulpa as, like, an assistant in your room, right? So, like, you would imagine this thought form assisting you in, like, your daily tasks, like sweeping the floor and
I would love
wiping
that.
Off the desk. And yeah,
Disney Princess
exactly.
Ghost Edition. That's
yeah.
what that would be.
That's what it kind of reminds me of, because... It's almost like she created this thought form and it was contained in this one room
mm-hmm.
of the house.
And so that's where she stayed. I am fascinated. I have no good theories. I don't think I have a single good theory. I just want it to be
yeah.
a murder tulpa.
That's cool. Let's let the cards do this
talking.
Let's
do it. Okay. Right? What do you want? What's your
honestly,
question?
From the beginning, what I'm curious about, I mean, let's just start simple and ask, was Olivia Mabel actually able to commune with her dead son before her death? Did she ever actually make contact with
him? That is a great question. How old was he when he died?
I believe he was 8.
Oh, okay. So he...
let's see. I believe so. I could be completely wrong. I know he was a young boy. But I think he was, like, 7 or 8. But the thing is, like, we seem to speak with the dead pretty frequently here
mm-hmm.
on this show,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, I'm curious if she ever was able to make real contact with him
so
after his death.
The answer is yes. We have the Ace of Swords, mental clarity, a breakthrough moment. Then we have the Hermit, so withdrawing. But I actually think that in this case specifically, the Hermit is, really, really deep introspective thinking. But then we have the Eight of Pentacles, which means that this is something that took her a long time to achieve. And then the Nine of Cups. So yes, she was able to do it to some extent, but it seems like it took a lot of effort and practice.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had years secluded in her house, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Hermit card, literally. Yeah, that's the perfect card for
yeah.
her.
It is. It really is. Because you have to imagine that someone like that, someone so focused on getting that person back,
mm-hmm.
right, would... Because as someone who uses tarot, who speaks to the dead, who, I mean, you're a medium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Do you find that when you have an emotional connection to the subject matter, that it's a stronger, that you're able to make a stronger connection to it?
Actually, honestly, it kind of depends. I will say, this is something that I've been talking to a few other friends about recently, that if I am in a bad PTSD state, it is much harder for me to make a connection. So the higher the emotions for me now currently make it harder for me to connect. But most of the time I'm talking to spirits who have found me, or in this type of setting where I'm curious and I'm engaging because I want to understand what happened. I don't [S2] Yeah. [S1] Know how many that I've talked to that I've had a really deep emotional connection to. So I am basing my answer off of my experience with PTSD, and I'm kind of imagining that kind of loss because I don't know what that feels like. I can't.
Right.
I honestly can't even.
It's unimaginable.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I was headed with that. But I would say that in that situation, it would be much harder for me.
Okay.
The grief, the sadness, the despair, those are hard to get around for me. I don't think that that's the case for everybody. I think it would be hard.
And do you think that when you're in those like heightened PTSD episodes, you might call them, do you think it's sort of like, for lack of a better turn of phrase, it's like sort of clouds your third eye?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just like a distraction from what you're trying to do?
Yeah, definitely.
That you're,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if I'm having a bad PTSD day, it's hard for me to write. It's hard for me to even pull cards.
Anything that requires you to like go with the flow of what's happening, right?
Yeah, or it's like some days it feels like taking Benadryl. You know, when you take Benadryl and the next day you're just all like groggy and your brain feels foggy. It feels like that, but with no Benadryl. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. So we've established that she was able to make some kind of connection with her son before. I mean, let's just go for it and ask if she was able to actually create a tulpa of her son. Like, did she ever reach her goal?
Let's see.
She stated openly to her husband in a letter that was her intention.
You said husband, and I turned over the spouse card. Like, if I had... I don't know why I'm not recording myself on a separate camera when we do these so that you guys can see what I'm doing. But yeah, I flipped over the spouse card right when you said, oh, the last card is the...
That's awesome.
The last card is the hermit again, which is interesting because I was shuffling this entire time. So the cards, we have the Two of Swords, and in this deck, it is genetic illness. And I think that that's important. Also, you can see the image on the card. It's like a hooded, creepy, sickly-looking figure. Then we have the Spouse card, which is the Two of Cups. And then we have the Hermit card again. The Two of Swords traditionally is about making a decision. So either her husband was in on it the whole time, or her husband was the reason she is not alive.
Wow. Okay. you seemed sort of reticent to make that statement.
I was. I don't know exactly why. It just... I mean... it. Okay. No offense to any of the men out there, but traditionally speaking, any chance that I have to be like, fuck this motherfucker, I take it without hesitation. So I'm not exactly sure how to explain that. I'm gonna chalk it up to, I'm gonna say the ghosts made me do it. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe your hesitation is more telling than we think.
Yeah,
Do you not feel like that's maybe the correct interpretation of it?
No, it's not that. It's just, it's like, like pointing a finger in another direction, trying like, don't say that. And I'm trying to say that, but it's just not quite working. So I haven't had this happen quite so strongly, but I have had this happen in the past where a victim had so much love for the individual who ended up ending their lives still that they didn't want to hear it. It's the equivalent of like sticking your head in the sand, right?
Sure.
So I think that what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the same question from the Memento Mori, but from those cards alone, I would look towards the husband and not a tulpa. Was there contact made?
Okay.
I don't, like, why would he want to? I don't know. Maybe she was calling him and was telling him about their dead son, and he was like, I need this shit to stop.
I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that too, and I could see that reaction from her being like, no. Those cards don't indicate a tulpa to me. That is a very clear decision made spouse, closeted woman locked away in her house. Yeah. You know.
I was thinking maybe if it was something less direct than like he showed up in Texas and choked her with a garrote. You know what I mean? Like maybe he like put her. Maybe he put her on the path that led to her death.
It could be. Could be that too. And maybe he suggested something like maybe he suggested a book or something harmless. I really don't know. And since this one's more recent, I'm a little hesitant to throw accusations around. But
sure.
Let me just ask the Memento Mori if she was in fact able to create a tulpa of her son. And we'll just compare the cards. Either they're going to go together.
I mean, I probably should have mentioned this sooner, but like, because there was the loss of a child involved in this story, mm-hmm. we chose from the very beginning to use fake names for all these people.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even better then.
It's,
okay.
Yeah. So you don't need to be too reticent.
Okay. Well, in that case, perfect.
And it did happen in Texas, but I even changed what town in Texas it happened in. So, and as we've discussed, Texas is fucking enormous.
It is so big. You could drive for hours here. You know.
So let's see what the Memento Mori has to say.
So the Memento Mori is backing up the intent to create. So the first card is the mortar and pestle, which is literally to create something. The pot, which is usually it's in terms of abundance, but in this case, planting a seed, watching it grow. But interestingly, then we have the crossroads and the witch's ball, which is a trapped confining energy. I don't think that she was able to create a tulpa. I think that that's what she wanted more than anything, and that that is what she devoted literally all of her time and efforts toward. That came out weird. Toward.
Toward. Your Texas
My
is
Texas
showing.
Is every once in a while, and then I say something, and I'm like, wait a second, that wasn't right.
At least you didn't throw an S on the end.
I do that sometimes.
Towards
I
it?
Say towards sometimes, yeah. that's my toxic southern trait, that and the bless your heart. Ironic, yeah. Bitchy or genuinely. So both sets of those cards definitely feel like that was her goal. That was all she wanted in the world, but neither one of those convinced me that she was actually able to do it.
And honestly, my next question for you was her husband involved in her death or the mysterious discovery of her
Fuck
body?
Yeah, it was. Let's ask. Let's break that into two questions. Question number one, was her husband involved in her death? Now that I know that this is a fake name, I'm all in.
Oh, yeah, go for
it. Sorry, ghost woman, your objections are being placed to the side. Because there is nothing more in this world that I love than saying the husband fucking did it. Because guess what? I consume a lot of true crime, and there's a reason that you look towards the
hashtag
husband.
Dateline.
Yep. Did the husband have anything to do with her death? In that exact accusatory tone. Okay, let's see. Poison is the first card. So, motherfuckers.
Oh, shit.
Depression. Poison. Depression. Okay, so violence.
Jesus.
I know. Even I couldn't have predicted these cards. Then we have fate, which is the Wheel of Fortune. So that feels like a yes to me. And then brokenhearted. Done. Spoiler.
I just clutched my pearls.
The husband did it, motherfucker. Okay.
Damn.
So one note that I did want to make about the poison card is that I was going to say that it doesn't always mean actual poison. A lot of the time I will take the poison card as a mental illness type card, your mind being poisoned. But then we do have violence right after that. So, you know, I'm just saying keep that in mind, but also a distinct possibility.
I mean, the poison card really stood out to me because her cause of death was undetermined.
See, that's fucking wild. That I am so thrilled right now.
Yeah.
I mean, RIP, I'm very sorry, but also I'm thrilled.
Yeah, of course. That's crazy.
I wasn't expecting such a dramatic answer. I love a bit of drama myself, so.
Yeah, that was about as dramatic as a card pull gets.
That was, I mean, there's an actual murder card in here, but aside from having the actual murder card, you can't.
Say poison and violence gets pretty damn
poison,
close.
Violence, a Wheel of Fortune, and brokenhearted. Say less, ma'am.
Yeah.
I get it.
Damn.
I get it.
That's intense.
That is intense. Well, now I want to know why.
Okay, so, since she had been dead 3 months by the time they discovered her, so I guess my question then would be, because he would have had to come back 3 months later, and maybe he just came and killed her, went back to Boston, and then 3 months later, he's sitting there like, what the fuck? No one has found her. You know what I mean? Maybe he was just up there waiting on the fucking shoe to drop and it never happened. And then he drove back down there. That was when calls were placed and stuff like that to get her, to have her discovered.
I have two different references in my brain right now. The first of which is a Nora Roberts book. Because I'm...
Wow.
I know. You know. Let me look away in shame. I am a slut for a mystery romance combo.
Sure.
But this particular... It's called Shelter in Place. I really enjoyed this one. Some of those get really predictable, but this storyline was actually very interesting. And... there was a moment where one of the characters convinced somebody else to take too many pills verbally. They didn't actually do anything. It just was specifically in this book, it is a mother grieving the loss of her son. And the person is like, don't you want to see your son? He's right there. Your son is saying... this is literally from the book. Your son is saying that you need to take those pills. I'm not using the names because I can't remember them. But, that's the whole thing, is that the mother was already a little fucked up, already crazy over grief, and she had a drinking problem in the book. I don't know about this woman in real life, but either way, the parallels are there in my brain. And yeah. It was the person who ended up killing this grieving mother didn't actually kill them. They just suggested it. So two times the idea of a choice or a crossroads have come up. And I'm wondering if it was maybe something like that, where he may have not even been physically present. This could have been phone calls or something like that. I don't know. The police probably looked into phone records.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying that there is a possibility. I kind of want to ask about that. But the other reference that I had in my brain was Edgar Allan Poe with the heart beating under the floorboards. It may have just driven him fucking crazy knowing that she was dead there and that nobody knew yet, and he just wanted it to be over, you know?
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
Yep.
Now I'm going to ask if he suggested.
Convinced her?
Yeah, convinced her.
Because imagine a situation where she calls him and she's like, you know, broken down.
He's back. I can see him.
I'm trying. Or like, I'm trying so hard and I can't get him back.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to just be like, well, there's one way you could be with him again.
You know what, though?
You know?
I think that might actually be it. So in this instance, I'm not sure that this was like a cruel... I mean, obviously it was cruel because she died. But the cards are strength, brother, which is the Page of Swords, but the image on the card is a young male child. Then we have dreams. And the image in this card is a woman. She's like slumped over, her head's hanging down, and there are like monstrous creatures looming over her. This is the Nine of Swords, and this is being plagued by anxiety, by your nightmares, like unable to rest from your demons. Then we have Resolute and Mother. So it does seem to me like the intent there would have been to maybe not to like convince her, but to ease her suffering. And I'm not even, you know, ooh, that feels icky to say. That's like Angel of Death stuff, you know. I don't like this choice, to quote my youngest daughter.
Like putting down a wounded horse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sort of brutal way to think about it.
It is brutal. It's wrong. It's twisted. I don't know. I mean, I kind of see where he's coming from. I mean,
I mean, I feel like he made the wrong suggestion.
Yes. If
that's what happened, right? But
yes.
I get the... Oh, man.
Yeah, I
don't want to say I understand, because,
I'm having the same
issue. It's a horrendous thing to do to someone. But what I mean is, like, I can see someone with maybe a less scrupulous moral compass.
Yeah, or even...
Thinking that, becoming convinced that, like, well, I'm just giving her a way out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And... Maybe just the idea of easing her suffering, and maybe the reason that he did call, or he went down there and he called after those 3 months, is because it was driving him crazy not knowing, instead of maybe maliciously being, I'm just going to ask, was there malicious intent? Because that'll change the way. I don't know. I feel like the way that I'm feeling right now, I don't think that it was. And also, I think the original cards would have been different. But due diligence. Nettle is protection. Blanket of protection with the apron. Childhood memories. The teapot is a healing remedy or spilling the tea. And the labyrinth is mental confusion. So I think that the intent here was to ease her suffering.
Yeah.
And I mean, we had violence in there. I don't know. I don't know. That's really hard to say, because these feel like two... Because the first set was so clear that he had something to do with it. But also, it could have been that clear just because technically he did. We've had several references to choices in these cards. We had the definite yes, he was involved. And then these ones indicating that potentially it wasn't like a violent act, but more of a suggestion with the intent to ease her suffering.
Here are my thoughts.
Okay, go for it.
So maybe what we're getting is two separate perspectives.
I was just thinking about that, and then I was trying to work out how to separate them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like...
because I think the latter might be the wife.
Like, yeah. So, in, like, what you mentioned with an angel of death, maybe this became truly an angel of death scenario for him in this moment, where... he was convinced that what he was doing was
the right thing.
Helping her.
Yeah.
Right? And but what she experienced was violence and death and poison and all those things. But he was convinced that he was helping her, that it was you know, comfort.
Yep. No, actually that makes perfect sense. Because if it's anything along the lines of like the book that the book reference that popped in my head.
Yeah.
Taking too many pills. That's not necessarily a gentle...
violent death?
Yeah.
I think people think of it as just like sort of drifting off to sleep, but...
not always the
overdosing,
case.
It can be a pretty violent death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there weren't any signs of that, though...
yeah.
Either way, I mean, like, they didn't know how she died... but 3 months later,
but also,
it probably would be kind of hard to tell, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, violence is a fairly vague term.
Violence is a vague term.
It can describe many things.
Yep.
So, many levels. Anytime you're imposing your will on someone else, that's a form of violence. Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So, him suggesting to her, like... you know, you could be with him again if you just do this.
You could be with him.
Right?
If he
convinced
you.
Her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If he convinced her of that, I would classify that as violence, even if it wasn't a particularly violent end for her.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
I know, actually, I would too. Like, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I was hoping for a tulpa.
Yeah. Honestly, I prepared like a dozen questions for this, and like eight of them are about tulpas.
I mean, so, I fucking love a tulpa story.
We went a different direction here, but
no, this sounds like a grieving woman who didn't have the means or the ability. Maybe she had the means, but when I say the means, I don't mean financial. I mean like,
yeah,
it
emotional.
Yeah, it's a fuck ton of work to bounce back from. I have not dealt with that level of grief, so I will not pretend to understand what that's like, but it is a fuck ton of work to bounce back from a traumatic event. Even if you are working day in and day out, you will still wake up and be like, well, fuck today, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the resources and stuff that I'm meaning. I'm not meaning monetary.
Yeah,
I
don't know. I feel like it's probably the most significant loss that an adult could experience, right?
Yeah.
Is the loss of a child. I think that's generally agreed upon.
Yeah.
Certainly the most dreaded loss, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
But in a weird way, I think when you lose someone that you're super close to like that, you sort of are dealing with your own death too, because you're no longer the same person you were before the loss.
Boom, 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 right? Boom. I always say that. I love like, this. Yes.
Yeah, you're because that like hole, that piece that's carved off of you when you lose that person, there's no putting that back.
Yep.
Right? And so you have to sort of like when you lose someone, I think people who have I lost my dad about a year ago, and I started to notice a pattern that people who had never really lost someone close to them would say things to the effect of, it'll get easier with time.
Does not.
You know what I mean?
It does not, in fact, get easier.
Right. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? It's just something that you live with forever.
Yeah.
It just becomes a part of who you are now. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's like, on top of the grief of the loss, there's also an adjustment period of like, this is who I am now. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
Ned.
So there's a lot there.
That makes.
There's, and I can't imagine a piece that big being carved off.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, like, you and I talk privately about our kids a lot. We're both parents. We both adore our children. I mean, like, even just tonight, my son, boy child, was out with someone that I trust with his safety. He was doing an extra class. She offered his friend's mother offered to drive him, and I was like, yeah, thank you so much. That's amazing. That saves me a trip. And he got home like 30 minutes later than I expected, and I was already nervous about it. Like, just being like, yep. Why isn't he? Well, he's not here yet. Is it like, should I call the mom? Should I text him? And I'm like, it's only, come on. You gotta fucking chill. Yeah. She was sending me videos. I know exactly where they were, but like, that level of like, I don't know that I could come back from that. that's the kind of grief that I believe that this woman was dealing with, and I respect that, and I respect anybody who has gone through that. But that's, I've been through a lot. I've been through very different, very, very different things. But even I have had days where I'm like, not in an I don't want to be alive kind of way, but in like, this is a fucking lot, and I don't think I could. Yeah. I don't think I could bounce back from the loss of a child. If I'm being perfectly honest,
yep.
With or without my current trauma, it would shatter my entire existence. I would not be able to move on if any one of my children were gone. So, like, I hope she's able to reconnect and find some peace with her son. After she passed, I'm positive she did.
Yeah.
But like, I could very easily see how she got where she did, and not think like, I don't find any of that strange. Like, Pet Cemetery is Pet Cemetery for a reason. It's because, we don't know how to move on and process that kind of grief. And I agree with you. You're not the same person. You're not the same person after a kind of loss like that. You're not the same person after experiencing a trauma, and a loss like that is a trauma, but like, you can look up the science. It is real. You are changed on a cellular level. You are literally not the same person anymore. So
it's an intense story.
It is an intense story.
It is.
I thought we were gonna have murder tulpas, but you know what?
Yeah,
I'm actually, this was fascinating, because one of the things that motivates me and drives me is understanding what makes people tick. I love knowing why people respond the way that they do in a certain situation. And in this case, I can look at both sides and say, I understand how she got here. And I can also kind of understand how he got there. Does that make it right? No. Yeah. Would I ever repeat his actions? No. I actually... You know, I'm not on board with what happened, but I understand it, because grief will do things to you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, not to this extent, but this happens very frequently, actually, with following the loss of a child. Is, you know, they always say that, like, the loss of a child does one of two things to a couple. It either pulls them together
or pushes them apart.
Mm-hmm. Right. And often it's so common that when it does push them apart, and the mother in particular is left without a support system, that it is very easy for the mother to have some real crises with mental health.
Yeah.
Like, it gets very bad very fast without a support system.
It does. Yeah.
And this woman obviously did not have a support system whatsoever once her husband left.
No.
I mean, she was left in this house alone for years.
Yeah. And
years. And this was a fairly young couple.
Yeah.
They were like in their late 20s when
this
happened.
Oh, that's really sad. I was imagining older for some reason. Yeah. I don't know why. But
yeah, no. They were a young family.
Yeah, that's really sad. A young family. Yeah, and the thing too is that friends and family, if she had close friends and family, there's only a certain amount of time that they're understanding. And I don't mean that they don't like understand and comprehend your loss, but if you're struggling for a prolonged period, there is an air of, I know, but it's been a while. Why aren't you over this by now? Yep. And it's because how do you get over something like that? So also if like, and I could be, well, this could just be pure imagination, but like if she did have people who were checking on her at first and she didn't get better, it's also entirely possible that those people just moved on with their lives and kind of forgot about her.
Yeah.
So she was literally left with her grief and, for lack of a better term, madness. So we're talking like Shakespeare level, woman gone woman losing her mind type of madness.
I'm suddenly feeling very guilty because there's, I have an in-law who lost a son in the early 2000s, and it kind of took over her life, mm-hmm. you know, the loss. And I have at times literally said to my wife, like, it's been so long.
Yep.
Like, why is this still such a,
yeah,
a central part of, and like, I mean, I can't imagine still being in that sort of soup of grief,
yeah,
and to have people say like, well, why can't you just get over it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I'm glad you said that because I'm,
yeah,
I feel like I need to make a phone call and apologize. Like, I'm feeling pretty guilty right
now.
Well,
I will say that on the other side too, like, there does come a time where you have to protect your mental well-being to an extent. Like, I sure. have done this to people. Like, I have done this, not in this exact situation, but I have been like, I can't handle this sadness anymore. I can't, like, this person is great. Yeah. I want the best for them. I can't take on that because of where I'm at in my life right now, too. So I think,
sure.
I think reactions like that are like twofold. It's a lack of understanding because, again, how do you understand it until it's happened to you? But I think it's multi-layered, and I don't think that anybody does it with, like, malicious intent. It's like, okay, come on.
Sure.
You know? But
there's a measure of self-preservation involved in it, right?
There is. Like, there is, you know? Like, yeah. Yeah.
And I imagine it's hard for the person who's in that grief to see people move on with their lives and have things going on, and you feel stuck in that moment of loss.
Yeah.
Right? As the world is like passing you by.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Womp womp.
I feel like it's a tough situation all around.
It would be a really tough situation. Yeah. Just what a bummer. And if they were in their 20s, in their 90s, then the dad's probably still living.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
I have questions for you, sir. I'm just kidding. Non-judgmental. But no. Yeah, this ended up being sadder than we expected it to be. But I also think conversations like this are important because it does...
I think so,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it does. And yeah. I think that sometimes when people are suffering and it's hard to understand that, it's hard to see someone that you love suffer, and it's hard when you are in a good place and they're not in a good place. It's also hard when you're in a bad place and they're in a bad place, because then you have to pick and choose who you can, like, yeah. to support. You know what I mean?
What burdens to carry.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like there are a multitude of reasons why things could have happened the way that they did. But either way, such a bizarre death. And I still feel like the husband, Rob, like, whatever happened, however he managed it, I feel like he probably called just because it was weighing on him. I think he knew, he knew what he suggested, and he knew that it probably happened, and just couldn't take it anymore. But then I also bet that I bet there was a little level of panic there and being like, oh shit, am I going to get in trouble for this? So however that worked out, that is my bet. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, to all the campers listening, you're welcome for introducing you to the Edgar Allan Poe, Nora Roberts mashup. You never knew you needed.
You never knew you needed that. This is why you need me as a medium, because I will pull out the most insane references that somehow work.
That's awesome.
How the ghosts talk to my brain. They're like, hey, do you want this bizarre pop culture or book reference? And I'm like, not really. Can you just fucking tell me? And they're like, nope. Here you go. Remember this plot point? And I'm like, why am I thinking about that book? I haven't even read that book recently. I don't even remember the characters' names. It actually scared the shit out of me the first time, though, because it was about an active shooter, and I was like, well, this is not the book for me. I read the entire thing. I loved it.
Yeah. That happens to me a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is interesting the way that... I like to say that you have to learn to speak the language of the dead, but I also feel like they speak in a way that makes sense to you. And for me, it's pop culture. I get a lot of movie references. I don't get a lot of book references, but today was books.
I feel like that's
tuning in.
I feel like that's a great example of the, like, the tulpa-like presence of the other, where you go to, like, cryptids and UFO sightings and things like that. Like, they are so often presented in a visual format that the experiencer can process them in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about...
like, you have World War II... you had, like, World War II vets seeing aliens in Nazi uniforms. Yes. You know what I mean? And it's like...
that's the bad guy to them. Yeah. It is literally learning to tune in and understand the information presented in a way that makes sense to you. Unfortunately for me, what makes sense to me does not make sense to most other people and doesn't happen in the way... at most, well, not unfortunately. I actually love the way that I do it, but
I mean, you're pretty good at interpreting it for people.
I am, it takes a little while sometimes, but it's a little lengthier. I'm not a cut to the chase kind of medium, but I recently had someone be like, "You're not a medium, you're a psychic," and I was like. Inwardly eye rolling. I was planning on making some posts on the difference between a medium and a psychic, what it means, but my favorite analogy still that was once on this show was that if you were an artist and you use a different medium, if you're an artist and you use colored pencils, if you're an artist and you use acrylic paints, if you're an artist and you use oil pastels, you're still a fucking artist. The medium is the tool. Yeah. My tools are just different.
Yeah.
And I love my toolkit. Pop culture references and all. Now I'm going to reread that fucking Nora Roberts book, okay? I'm going to do it and I'm going to love every moment of it, and then I'm going to close it and say could have read something more worthwhile. But that's who I am as a person.
You are the only medium I've ever met or spoken with who would ever have the interaction like, did the man kill his wife? And you're like, well, do you remember this Harrison Ford movie? It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she gets weird sometimes, and I'm here for it. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Well, this was awesome.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite ones. Ryan fucking missed out.
He did miss out. He missed out on a solid conversation on grief and what it can do to a person. I super loved this. I really love it when these stories, I would have been fucking thrilled if it was a murder tulpa. I'm not going to lie. I would have been so here for that. I would have been salting my bedroom and be like, don't you fucking come for me, murder tulpa. You get out of here.
Yep.
But I'm equally excited to talk about the effect that human emotions can have on cases like this. So, 10 out of 10.
Imagine how scary, just for a moment, imagine how scary a tulpa of a drowned 7-year-old boy would be.
Oh, he drowned? He drowned? Yes. He'd be dripping water everywhere? Yeah. Oh, he'd be like the ring. Ugh.
Yep.
That would be so scary. See, a murder tulpa wouldn't call the police. A murder tulpa wouldn't even know how to call the police. It would only know murder. That would be a great story. You should write that story.
I just freaked myself out a little bit.
Yeah, for real. If the cards had been like, yeah, this was a murderous, vengeful spirit that she created, I would have been all up in my room like spraying peppermint and rosemary and whatever else the fuck I have and be like, be gone.
I have to walk like 100 feet through my dark backyard when we're
gotta
done.
Use your flashlight on your phone. Be so, like,
apparently.
Excuse me, drowned murder tulpa boy. Yeah. Back the fuck off. Good thing you don't have any water near you.
Yeah, true. Oh, man.
All right.
Thank you so much, Carly. This was awesome.
This was great. And we'll see y'all next time.